Hello and welcome to another edition of Inside Network Marketing. This is Len Clements and this is show number 12 on August 16th, 2009. I just want to get, as usual, a little bit of house cleaning out of the way before we get to the news. We got a jam-packed show for you again once more. I may even break my all-time record of an hour and 29 minutes. I'm going to really try not to. But we have a lot of information to cover that I've been promising you for a while now. So, and this is based on popular demand. The companies I'm going to be talking about are the ones that you've been requesting the most. I am going to do just a brief update on Global Verge. I'm not going to do another whole show on them, like I said. But I know I'm kind of going against what I said in the past. But folks, when you're doing updates constantly on, like a really great soap opera, and then you say you're not going to comment on it anymore, and then right after you say that, they air their most tragically funny episode ever. I got to at least comment on it one more time, so you'll see what I mean when we get to it here in a second. And then also just a relatively brief overview of some observations about financial destinations, FDI, which seems to be where a lot of the old Global Verge people are going to. And then just a brief update on Y2B Travel. And then some more in-depth analysis and commentary on iJango, eFusion, and Mandura, because those are the three that are by far the ones you keep asking for commentary on. So that's what I'm going to give you here. And if we have time, no promises now. I know I've in the past I always say we're going to do this, and then I run out of time and I say don't do it. I do have a subject for the rant zone, and that is Zango's X51 product. So no problem with the product, but some of the ways it's being marketed deserves a rant, so I'll try to get to that as well, too. But again, I want to just get one little quick thing out of the way here. I appreciate all the feedback that all you gave me from the last podcast about the Inside Network Marketing Seminar that I want to do here in Las Vegas. It's looking like I'm definitely going to do one of these. Enough of you certainly said that you want to do it. Some of you even suggested that you're going to fly from the other side of the world to get here to do it. So not just for that, but you're coming here to Vegas anyway. It's a nice way to write it off. And that's really what I'm trying to base the price on, too, by the way, which is $395 for this all-day, one-day thing. Some of you are probably new. I'm going to rehash this really, really quickly here because I'm probably getting a little bit different audience for this podcast than the ones I've done just about Global Verge. So for those of you who are new on the show, there is a book I wrote called Inside Network Marketing, which is kind of an insider's look at the industry, which is now in a PDF format. You can download it off my MarketWave website. It's a product you can purchase. You can also go to the MarketWave website and just look at the link where it talks about the Inside Network Marketing Seminar. Now, that's the seminar I've been doing for years. That's not exactly what this is, although I'm going to call it by the same name. Look at that list and then just kind of ignore all this, the bullet points about the new distributor. And look at the bullet points for the more experienced distributors. There's a lot of that stuff I still want to include, but I also want to include a lot of just really insider-type stuff about how comp plans really work behind the scenes. And there's a lot of behind-the-curtains type things from an ex-MLM CEO standpoint, a comp plan consultant for 19 years. It's going to be kind of like, imagine like if you were to go to a meeting where a magician is going to show you how all the tricks work. So that's kind of what I want to do here, except a little bit different spin on it. Instead of a room with dozens or hundreds of people in it, I'm going to do something that John Fogg has tried with some success. It's a very unique concept. He's actually invited people to come to his home and spend a weekend with him, just in his home. And he's limited it to 5 people. And he's charging a much larger amount than I'm charging for, and he's getting it. I think because there's really something very attractive to the intimacy and the personal attention and just that kind of environment. I like to do that too, smaller numbers of people, and maybe perhaps do them more often. So I'm looking at possibly renting a suite at one of the major resorts here on the Strip, possibly the Luxor, since that's a big pyramid, and I thought that would be kind of funny and ironic. Plus, that's one of my favorite hotels, actually. And the suite, of course, would have the kitchen right there, would have a bathroom right there. It would have a bedroom in case I completely bore any of you, that kind of thing. So I think it's a much more kind of an intimate environment where there's maybe just 10 or 12 people. That's it. And you get a lot of personal attention, a lot of Q&A, a lot of interaction. We'll have breakfast together, get started about 10 o'clock, probably work through lunch. We'll order out pizza or something. Around 6 o'clock, it'll be on a Saturday. About 6 o'clock, we knock off and we go have dinner and see a Vegas show. And I've got a great show that's where dinner's included and everything, $85. It's called V for Variety. And there's a link to it. My old alert will be to this one, too. You can check out that show. I've already seen it twice. It's a great show. Like I said, you get dinner with it. So that would be extra, of course. But The $395 basically gets you the day of all this inside information, and I've priced it so if even two people, but surely a family of three or more, can make a weekend out of this, and your tax savings would more than cover the cost of the event. Because, you know, based on your airfare and your lodging and your transportation and everything, even though lodging is really cheap out here now, you know, whatever you could obviously write off the trip, it's tax deductible, and basically your Uncle Sam covers the cost of your entry into the Inside Network Marketing Seminar. You might even make a little profit on it, actually, if a family of three or more were to come out here and do that, make a weekend out of it. So that's what I'm looking to do. Right now, it's just kind of sending up a trial balloon. For those of you who are hearing about this for the first time, email me at showfeedback@cox.net, COX.NET. So just showfeedback@cox.net and let me know, would you be interested in doing that? I'm not looking for commitments now or anything, but if it was the right date, some Saturday, you know, next month in September, if it was the right time and, you know, get a little more information about it, you know, would you be interested in learning more about an event like that and possibly attending? That's really all I want to know. So, yeah, let me know and give me some feedback on that and also what times might work out too. The more of that kind of information I get, the better maybe I can plan it. I also want to, of course, obviously give people, you know, at least a couple of weeks notice, if not more, so you can get the best airfares and kind of, you know, plan maybe a little vacation around it or something like that. But I do want to kind of get this going quick here before it gets too late into the year. So, yeah, give me some feedback on that. Let me know what you think, and we'll see if we can put that together. Let's get to the news. Global Verge, Buzzerk Mobile. As I've said in the last podcast, I don't want to spend a lot of time on them anymore, especially since Troy Dooley over at MLM Help Desk is doing such a good job of covering them, so I don't want to kind of overlap our efforts here. Like Troy, I find it more, like I said, tragically humorous maybe than aggravating, although I can certainly see where the anger comes from that he exhibited in his podcast, because I'm angry only in the arrogance that comes out of this company from the standpoint that they just think that their distributors must be idiots. You know, they've got thousands and thousands of people that, well, no matter what they tell them, they're going to believe them, no matter how ridiculous and how illogical and nonsensical that it is. And if it's true that hardly anybody's leaving this thing, which I don't think is true, and hundreds of people are still joining, I guess I can kind of see their point. It's like, they do believe anything that they dish to them, no matter how nonsensical it is. Here's what I mean. They have a new spokesperson here, a new PR person, Valerie. And I know I'm not going to really throw Valerie under the bus here because she's doing her job. She was hired to do this. When OJ went to court, somebody had to get hired to defend him. All right, it's not a pretty job, but somebody's got to do it. And that's her job. That's her profession. They've hired her to be the public relations person for this company, and she's putting their best foot forward the best way that she can. But I think that the greatest PR person ever in the history of PR would probably be in over their head on this deal. But she's trying valiantly, and I'm sure she's just passing on what she's been told to pass on. But it is just ridiculous. What they're trying to spin now is that the fact that 01 dumped them, as I mentioned on my last alert that I sent out, 01 has dumped Global Verge. They've cut ties. They're not going to supply the cell phone and the technology and the SIM cards after all of this time. And there was no notice. Just the press release went out from 01. And supposedly there was no conversation in advance. Everybody at Global Verge was blindsided by this. They're still trying to get a hold of Ben Polani to talk to him, to ask him, you know, what the hell's going on here. But all they said in the press release from the public relations person, or I guess the chief information officer over there at 01, was that there was a breach of contract. So they're cutting ties with 01, and the breach of contract wasn't identified, although, like I said in my alert, I'm assuming, and that's all this is, that there was probably some type of clause in their contract against being an embarrassing train wreck, you know, like a no embarrassing train wreck clause or something. But how Global Verge is now spinning this is that this is all the rep's fault. These reps that have been standing by them and believing everything that they've been saying for all of these months, that have been hanging in there even though they haven't been paid for 2 months, they haven't gotten the cell phone that they were promised, those people, the most loyal distributors, it's at least a faction of them, it's their fault that all of this fell apart. It has nothing to do with the fact that Global Verge has been, for the last several months, an embarrassing train wreck. It's the distributors' fault because they were not compliant. And we've known for quite some time that 01 has had some problems with compliance issues as far as what Global Verge distributors have been saying, or Buzzerk Mobile distributors have been saying, online, And they have had some compliance issues, no question about that. But first of all, that's not why you would terminate the contract. And if it was, surely you would give the company some warning that you were going to do that right before you did it, one last chance. There'd be some kind of pre-knowledge that it was coming up, which, of course, again, Global Verge is claiming blindsided by this, had no idea it was going to happen. But when I go online right now and I look at all of the goofy claims that they were making before, like G5, you know, technology and all this Generation 5 technology, stuff like this, there's hardly anything online anymore. I mean, Google it right now. Almost everything that you see, if you look up Global Verge and G5 as just an example, is you'll see a lot of hits, or a couple of thousand of them, but almost all of them are either old blog entries from people talking about Global Verge, people saying it was G5, or most of it are people challenging the claim, saying they can't really have G5 because there's no G4 and all this kind of stuff. It's not distributor websites still claiming this. I found very, very few of them, and the ones I did find, like I said, I just did a simple Google search, and there it is. So they're easy to find and shut down. So I have a real hard time believing that that's really the reason they're doing this. They're just trying to pass the buck and blame it on somebody else. And this is a cute little thing, too. Valerie went on there, this is the PR person, and said that they've had all these compliance issues about all these claims that have been made that violate FCC, they get them in trouble with the Federal Communications Commission and stuff like this. And by the way, none of this is true. You know, I mean, G5 is a marketing term. That isn't something that can get you in trouble with the FCC or anything. But even if it was, she then says, we need you to clean up everything. You need to really help us and get out there. And she didn't say this in just so many words, but she essentially said, turn in your fellow distributors, you know, tattle on them. You know, be our eyes and ears and get out there and tell us where all these websites are and show us your website and get it approved by us again or whatever. And we've got to really clean this up so we can show them that we're doing this because we still might have a chance of resurrecting this deal. And that's not going to happen now. I'll explain why in a minute, but it's... We got to get show them this. So here's what you got to do. Now I'm figuring. Now here's the part where, for the very first time, they're going to actually give them a specific list of all of the bogus claims they've got to stop making. Which, by the way, up till this point, and I believe I have listened to beginning to end about every call they've ever made coming from corporate. Nowhere, they always talk about these compliance issues, but they never say, stop saying this, stop saying this, we don't really have that, we don't really do this, it can't really do this. There's no list like that anywhere out there. So now, here, finally, we're going to get that list. They're going to be told, here's what you've got to take off your website. And what does she say? You've got to remove all references to 01 Unified Technologies Group, 01's parent company, and Ben Polani, the owner of 01. That's it. And then we'll show them that we're being compliant. Removing those things from their sites has never been part of the compliance issue. In fact, they were specifically told, you've got to change what you say about 01 to powered by 01. They were specifically told to put 01 in their website within that context. Not only that, but as Val was saying this on the call, and as of this morning, it still says on the Buzzerk Mobile corporate website that's powered by 01. So whether telling all of you out there, you got to take that off your website immediately, any reference to 01 or Ben Polani, it's still on their own corporate website. It still is to this day. By the way, on the corporate website, it still says Laptop Magazine awarded 01 Mobile Best Overall Product Award, which was rescinded weeks ago now. Yet it still says that. The corporate website is the most uncompliant website I could find. And by the way, there's such an easy solution to this. Don't have distributor websites. Have self-replicating websites. This is very cheap and easy to program, folks. You simply have a website that corporate creates. You sign up. You get a replicated website of that, which has a little bit of customization where it's your contact information in there, and everybody has the same website. It's just a cookie-cutter website that simply leads back to you so you can track the leads. Anyone else who has any kind of website, I don't care what is on it, if you have anything other than a corporate-approved, self-replicating website, you're out. Terminated. Instantly, zero-tolerance policy. Now, if we're talking about saving this billion-dollar technology-revolutionizing product that you got access to, and it could kill that deal, yeah, a zero-tolerance policy would probably be called for here. So that's it. That's it. The whole thing could have been ended the whole time with this simple process of self-replicating websites. Can anybody that doesn't use it? That's all they got to do. It's all they ever had to do. So I'm going on too long on this. The reps have also been charged a credit card processing fee because Global Verge went with an offshore processing bank in Antigua, I believe it is. But again, that's also not their fault. That's the issuing bank's fault that they're charging you that extra fee. And we're trying to negotiate, maybe bring that down or get rid of it. But in the meantime, we're going to give you some certificates for some free dinners to help compensate for that. It absolutely is their fault. Okay, it's like saying, okay, I want you to take this free highway to get to my office. Oh, wait, now I want you to take this toll road to get to my office. We're going to block off that other highway so you can't take that free highway anymore. Now we're demanding, with no choice now, you've got to take this toll road. But it's not our fault that you have to pay the toll because we don't have access to the free highway anymore. Does that logic make any sense to you? You know, it's the city engineer's fault, or the public transportation's fault, because they're the ones who charge you for to use that road that we're making you have to take now because we lost our access to the free highway. But it's not our fault. So anyway, it gets worse. Here's the last thing, and I'm going to move on. They just announced on a call that had to have been sponsored by corporate, even though these were top leaders on the call. But they just announced that out of the blue, T-Mobile has the identical service as 01 was going to offer them, except slightly more can go in to the pay plan. It's even a little bit better deal, so it's going to be the same price, same unlimited everything. It's available right now. All those months you've been waiting and nobody could get any phones, and where are the SIM cards and all that stuff they've all been going through, this entire time they've had access to the exact same thing through T-Mobile, which, by the way, is who they were pitching in January. Late last year and into January, they were talking about a T-Mobile service that they were pitching, which they completely dumped and stopped talking about right after they met Ben Polanyi at an event out here in Vegas, and they started to go with them. But they've had T-Mobile the whole time. So the entire time, all of you out there have been being told about their cell phone's coming, it's coming, it's coming, they're beta testing, they're working on the SIM cards, and we're going to get it to you. That entire time, they're now claiming they had access to the identical service for an identical price with even more margin to put into the compensation plan through T-Mobile, and it's available right now. So, folks, if you are still in this deal and you are not completely insulted by now by how much they might as well get on every call every night and just say, "Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Global Verge call. We think you're all blithering idiots." That's the exact equivalent statement is what they're telling you. So why don't they just come out and say it? Because that's pretty much what they think you'd have to be to keep believing all of this stuff. Understand, even if the T-Mobile thing is true, look at all that entails. This entire time they've had this product to give you that you've been waiting for. They're essentially admitting they've had it the whole time. Anyway, I'm gonna try to be done with Global Verge, but I know they're going to come out with something else I'm going to have to comment on. Because it's just too easy not to. But that's the latest on them. Financial destinations, which is where a lot of them seem to be going to, which is kind of interesting because they're sort of it's almost kind of the same situation as Global Verge in a lot of ways. Global Verge was a struggling little MLM company that had nothing to do with cell phone technology, and they started a division to sell the technology when they met another company that had this cell phone technology. They wanted to run through it. Well, Financial Destinations is not a cell phone technology company. I mean, they're kind of like the Global Verge in this scenario. And they went to GI Connect, which is actually, I think, called Global Phone Corporation. So I guess that could sort of be like the Unified Technologies Group and 01, the equivalent players there. And now they're going to start running these phones through Financial Destinations, which will be a cell phone company now for the first time. I'm not saying anything's wrong with that. I'm just saying it's just interesting how there's sort of like the same kind of characters in both shows here, But FDI is essentially a theater program, kind of like Global Verge was. Let's put all these people into Global Verge first while we're waiting for the phone to come out. That way they can buy these Global Verge products, which has nothing to do with cell phones, and we can still make a bunch of money and a bunch of cash and go around. The company can still revenue while we're waiting for the phones. That's exactly what's happening with FDI. People are getting to this FDI thing, which has a sort of kind of hodgepodge of different services, somewhat similar, although more extensive, than Global Verge was offering. It's a collection of services that are like LifeLock Identity Theft Protection, a discount buyer's program like Discount Pharmacy, dining discounts, a travel booking website, same kind of stuff that was in GlobalVerge. It has nothing to do with cell phones, but just pile them all into that so they can all make money in that while we're waiting for the phones. Well, will their phone come out? We should know by now, actually, because I'm talking at 2:30 on Sunday afternoon, and this weekend they're having their convention in Baltimore where they're going to be announcing their phone. I'm assuming they've announced it by now, and it's available. And I've already told one of their distributors, by the way, so please don't deluge me with a bunch of pitches and contact information. But I've said, look, if you guys do have a phone with unlimited domestic calling for $10 or $20, I think it was, something like that, I'm paying $32 right now for both myself and my mother, and so that's 60-something total, with 700-minute limit, and I don't care about calling Peru or Luxembourg or someplace like that. But if I can get unlimited national calling, not international, and for that price, I'm going to be a customer. I'm not going to be a distributor for it, but I mean, I'll be a customer for that. I think it's a great deal. And again, no reason to believe that they're not going to come out with that technology or that type of pricing with unlimited everything, because so many other people are coming out with it now. This is not apparently that earth-shaking, revolutionary kind of a concept. I'm seeing things pop up all over the place that are claiming not just unlimited with really secret little limits, because that was true. GlobalVerge said some of them are doing that, but they're making a point of saying, no, really, unlimited, everything, for a lower price than what GlobalVerge was going to offer. So, it's not that big of a deal anymore, it seems like. But anyway, the only concerns that I have about financial destinations, and there are not many, but I do have a concern about the fact that I think you can pay $40, $60, or $130 monthly, and so we're talking about up to about $1,559 annually for all of those little services I told you about. I would question whether or not anyone would really pay these types of fees for these services if there were no income opportunity, but I'm not going to really challenge that, because if you really use them all, it'd be worth it. It's like this $25 book I buy every year from Entertainment Something or whatever. It's this big, thick book with all these coupons for discounts at restaurants and miniature golf and whatever. And you know what? I never make my money back on that $25. But if I would go in and actually use the coupons in that book, I could easily make my $25 back and be worth it. It's just a matter of if I want to go out and actually use it all. I just never get off my butt and go do it. So if you actually use all of this stuff and really take advantage of everything they offer, I suppose it might be worth it. So it's not so much that I have a problem with, as it is the training packages that they pay commissions on. That's always going to be a red flag. You got a one-time $100 and $200 training, or $99.95, and it's commissionable. It's part of the commission plan. Now, this is clearly something only a distributor would buy. You have to recruit to make money off of it. It's like a sales aid or a distributor kit or anything else that you're not supposed to pay commissions on, because it's so distributor-centric. You can't buy this FDI training, mark it up, and resell it to someone who's not a distributor. And I know they're going to come back with, well, because they've already done this, by the way. Well, Jerry Nira is our attorney, and he's one of the best attorneys out there. So I kind of headed that one off. Jerry's a friend of mine, and I've asked him. And in his always diplomatic way, he's simply confirmed in a very short email that he was hired by FDI in the very beginning, when they first formulated the company years ago, to review their information. And the commissions on the training packages was not part of what he reviewed. He made no comment on it either way, so don't go emailing Jerry. He simply said it wasn't part of what he reviewed. Okay, that's new since he reviewed them. So all I'm saying is don't come back to me and say, well, then it has to be legal because one of the best MLM attorneys out there, which he is, said it is. So that's something that's new since then. So that's really the only concern that I really have about them, and which makes sense because, like I said, there's not a lot of money in the actual products. They were sold individually. There's not a lot of margin there, and there's certainly not going to be enough margin in the cell phone service to make a whole lot of money. So you got to compensate for that somewhere. And in most service companies, sure enough, they got a training package up front to pay commissions on, and that's where most of the money is coming from, as you'll see when I get to the iJango section of this show. But let's move on. Y2B Travel, just a real quick update. I've seen a lot of Y2B Travel distributors gloating about the fact the class action lawsuit was dropped in Illinois. Again, this is not the state attorney general action. This is a distributor class action lawsuit. So they're getting that mixed up because it happened in Illinois, so they're thinking the attorney general lawsuit against them, which is still ongoing and may go for years, the way these the government agencies go. But no, this is a distributor class action lawsuit. Originally got thrown out not because it didn't have any merit, but because they said that most of the people that were part of the class weren't residents of Illinois. You know, they were out of state, and this is an Illinois action, which kind of wonders, like, why did they even file it? Well, they refiled it, and just recently it got kicked back out again. And this time, I remember reading the suit. I read it. I remember reading this going, like, my God, someone's writing a novel here. Whoever the attorney was, or the assist paralegal or whoever they hired to do this, I mean, it's just this minutia of detail that was way beyond anything I've ever seen in a legal complaint before. It was like literally they were writing a screenplay for a story or something. I remember thinking the judge reading this just must be cringing at this. And then sure enough, when it was reintroduced and eventually thrown out again, the judge referred to it as ungainly monster. That's a quote. The complaint itself was an ungainly monster. So that's why it was thrown out. Again, not because it didn't have any merit, because it just didn't apply to people who weren't residents of Illinois. Okay, iJango. iJango is based on what they call pay-per-clicks. Okay, pay per, not like sheet of paper, pay per clicks. In other words, where you, if you just go on and you click on different links, the advertisers will pay the person who posted those links or those banner ads by just the number of people that clicked on them. Obviously, they don't pay very much, you know, like literally pennies. And so there's not a whole lot of money in that that can be put into a compensation plan. Not only that, there's, like I've said before, folks, except for some rare exceptions, one of which I'm about to describe when I get to Mandera, most everything has been tried in this industry. We know what works and what doesn't work by just looking at the last 7 decades of what people tried, and we just do the stuff that works and don't do the stuff that doesn't work. So we know from looking at companies like Agloco, I think it was called, which eventually morphed into All Advantage, as I recall, AdSurf Daily, 12 Daily Pro, Local Ad Link, which isn't really like this, but kind of the same sort of genre of opportunity. 4 of the 5 I just mentioned, by the way, I think are dead. Like, these are the dead predecessors of iJango, which would I'd make it kind of a cool rock band name, the Dead Predecessors. You know, the groupies can be called Dead Preds or something. There's a joke there somewhere, but I don't have time to develop it. So I'm moving on. The company was founded by Steve Smith. He's one of the two guys. Steve Smith got his experience and his success previously through Excel Telecommunications, a very huge long-distance service company. It's primarily what they sold, which is now gone. But he certainly had a lot of success with that back then, so he does have some good MLM experience. He's also had some experience with something called Everyday Wealth, which is online planning MLM, and another one called, I think it was called Ultimate Choice Travel, which if you go to that website, it now forwards to iJango, so that kind of tells you how well those companies did. But this is not your first attempt since he left Excel to start an MLM company. Also, I've heard, too, from more than one person independently of each other, so I kind of give that a little more credibility, although I haven't confirmed it, that when people first started signing up for iJango, their credit cards were actually billed Unlimited Choice Travel. It didn't say iJango on the credit card bill. I'm sure they've since fixed that. But so you can kind of see how one sort of like incarnated into the other. But the other character involved with this, the one that is certainly the most intriguing, is Cameron Barrett Sharp, who also at one time was referred to as Barrett Stone. And there's a reason he changed his name. And the reason, he openly admits in full glorious detail by going to Cameron B. Sharp, that's with an E on the end, .com. And I'm going to go ahead and plug his site because if he's sincere, I think it's a great response to all of the negativity that's out there about him, because there's a lot of it. And I'm not going to go into a lot of detail of it here because I couldn't possibly explain it any better or in any more detail than Cameron himself did on his own website. But I'll just run through them real quick so you kind of get an idea. He started something called Ultimate Singles. I think there was Ultimate Introductions, Ultimate Match, Premier Singles, Soulmate.com. Those were all like dating websites. I think he was also associated with something called GrowRich.com. But these sites had, some of them had like massive amounts of complaints against them. The Better Business Bureau gave them an F. I understand there was some kind of investigation into them because of the number of complaints that were against these. These were MLM, by the way, MLM dating sites that he tried. He was a deadbeat dad, over $19,000 in child support that he owed, an alcoholic, a cocaine addict, dropped out of high school after only 2 years, entered rehab like 6 times since the summer of 07. So a lot of this stuff is fairly recently. It's what he says on his website. And by the way, I'm saying this because I'm repeating what he said on his website. I mean, he doesn't dodge any of this. He openly says, that was me, that's who I was then, but now I've completely turned my life around. I got sober, found God, and all of this occurred just within about a year of launching iJango. I believe in second chances. I believe people can, in fact, turn their life around. The only thing that kind of concerns me here, and the reason why I'm kind of taking what he's saying with a grain of salt, is because, first of all, the gap between who he was then, which, as you can tell, from simply glossing over the highlights of his life, he was not a great person, as he openly admits he wasn't. Well, that person to the person today, there only appears to be a little more than a year gap between the two. That'd be about pretty much 2008, because he registered, by the way, iJango.com in March of 2009. So he's been working on this for a while, so assuming that he cleaned up his act and everything a little before he started working on iJango, we know certainly through the end of 2007 he was still having some challenges. So basically we've got 2008 he took to completely turn himself around into a completely different person. I'd like to think somebody could take, you know, their entire adult life of being one thing and become almost the opposite extreme of it within 1 year. I just find that hard to believe. Maybe with more time, absolutely. Maybe even 2 or 3 years, maybe. I don't know. In just 1 year, the timing just seems a little curious that he became this wonderful new person, or at least he's who he's trying to be, a little before he started iJango. But I will say, I'll give him credit, man. If you're going to deal with something like this, put up that website and just come clean and say, this is me, this is who I was, this is what I did, I'm sorry, I'm trying to make amends, and I'm turning my life around, I got sober, I did this, and this is who I'm trying to be now. That is, at least from a marketing standpoint, and like I said, I really hope he's sincere, but either way, man, that's a great way to respond to it. As opposed to hiding behind it or rationalizing everything you did or changing your name so people can't find you, which he's changed it back, by the way, to his real name now. Or, you know, like we, you know, people I've investigated in the past just recently where, like, previous to 2003, you can find no record of them at all. You know, that kind of thing. So typically there's a reason for that. But, man, Cameron definitely handled this the right way. And I remember this one website, it's not the same one that I just linked to, but there was one where there's a comment section below it, and there's just all of these people below just going, just praising him for the way that he handled this and saying, you know, wishing him the best of luck and they're going to pray for him and all this kind of stuff. You know, exactly the opposite reaction you would think from someone who just said, this is all the stuff that I've done, because he admitted it. He came clean. I'm telling you right now, if Richard Nixon would have just said, oops, sorry, screwed up, bad boy, never do it again, he would have finished his term. You know, Bill Clinton never would have gotten impeached. I tell you, man, just admitting it and moving on is absolutely the best way to handle it, and that's the way this guy handled it. So, like I said, it could be just a marketing ploy, but nonetheless, there is no better way to have done it than the way he did it. Bottom line, though, as far as iJango, this is nothing new, folks. There is nothing new, unusual, fancy, special. This is basically just, an uptick better than iGoogle. Go to iGoogle.com and look what's out there. And there's other ones out there, too, that can do pretty much the same thing that iJango does. So this is not anything new. It's nothing revolutionary. And the biggest problem with it, it's free. It's completely free. Now, explain to me how you're going to get any income at all, let alone wealthy, as they're claiming, from giving away something for free. Now, seriously, do I even have to go any further at this point as far as this as a viable income opportunity? You're going to get wealthy giving away something for free. Cameron says on that little black and white video that he does in the beginning where, you know, this, like this Tom Cruise-ish looking guy kind of comes out with this really intense kind of voice, and he tells you about, he come up with this concept one day, what if I could multi-level market Google? I remember the moment he said that on the video, I thought, it wouldn't work because Google is free. You'd be giving away something for free. So that wouldn't be a good idea. So the whole rest of my search was, what's the catch? Well, here's the catch. You don't really get paid for giving that away or for the little pennies you would make from clicking on the stuff or whatever, or for anything that you sell through the site. It's basically one of these like shopping malls where if someone, you give away all these free websites, if someone goes to that website and orders any of the products through all the little affiliate things and stuff that they've set up, or any of the products that they're actually selling, you know, then you make little commissions on it, but that won't work for the same reason none of them in the history of internet web malls have ever worked, because you're paying a little tiny percentage of a little tiny percentage of that product, and there's just no money in it. All of them, like KM.net and Big Smart, YDB Travel, you know, it was just a travel booking website. There's no money getting a little tiny percentage of a little tiny percentage of the commission, so they had to sell the travel site for hundreds of dollars, and that's where all their, you know, 80% of their revenue and 80% of their commissions came from, which is why California and Missouri both said that they think they're a pyramid. Or they sued them for that. So they have to compensate that for some way and somehow to make money. How they do it here is they charge you what they call a director fee for $150, $149.95. So call it $150, $19.95 per month is what you then pay after that. And they even say directors must renew their representative agreement each month by paying the $19.95. This is not a product you sell to an end-user customer who might have no interest in the income opportunity, which is the only thing you can commission. This is something directors must renew their representative agreement each month and pay this $19.95. The $149.95 is not something you would mark up and resell to someone who's not a distributor. There is no end user value to this. It's something only distributors, only representatives of iJenga would ever purchase. They even referred to the $19.95 monthly as a back office maintenance fee. Who else but a distributor would want a back office maintenance fee? The shopping mall itself, they said, is based on 3% to 40% affiliate fees. Well, that's kind of like, you know, saying, you know, they're all 3% to 15%. There's like hundreds of them. Then there's one weird exception that might be 40%, so you put that at the end of the range. No, if you were to do a bell curve here, most of these affiliate fees would be between 3 and maybe 10 or 15%, somewhere in that range. So of which, like I said, that goes into the compensation plan and gets split amongst a bunch of different people. So you have no money in that. It's the $100 bonus that you earn. It's the payout of $100 on the $149.95 director fee. And there's no residual in that kind, by the way, because they only buy it once, right? You pay the $150 once. When you come in, your director's fee, $100 goes out when you get someone to sign up for three free websites. Now, think about this. There's no income for getting three customers to just sign up for free websites. No money comes in to anybody. So, obviously, that's not where the $100 is going out from. No question it's coming from the $149.95. Now, this is interesting because there is an Excel influence here. You can tell because Excel Telecommunications, no money is in the long-distance service. This was, I remember in the late 90s, Pac Bell once said that the average long-distance residential phone bill was $29 or $26, something like that. It fluctuated. They paid out 8% to 10% of that, 8 to 10% of $26, $29. In most what they call pills and potions companies, the average payout's what, 45, 50% of about $100. So which one's going to make you the most money? So there's no money in the long distance. So to compensate for that, they charge several hundred dollars for a training package up front, of which they paid several hundred dollars in coding bonuses out on if you collected a bunch of little long distance customers. But obviously it didn't come from the long distance customers because you're paying out way more than what their phone bills would have been in the beginning. It came from the training fee you paid up front, which they denied then, but their attorney at the time, Ted Lindauer, completely and openly admitted in my interview with him in a previous podcast. Absolutely it came from that, but he tried to rationalize why it was okay to do it that way. But there's no question that's where it came from. On a little bit smaller scale, that's exactly what's happening here. There's no money in the actual stuff they're selling, so they're going to charge $150 up front, pay $100 out if you get three people to sign up for a free website. So it's based on customer acquisition, they'll say, but clearly that $100 could never get paid out if that wasn't the $150 you'd pay up front. So I also got a couple of other little issues with them too, like for example in their policies and procedures there's a 6-month non-compete. Folks, if you're a distributor, this is one of the reasons why you should always read your company's policies and procedures. Okay, if there is any type of non-compete in it, that would be reason enough alone right there to never sign up for that company. Because think about this, you are an independent contractor, you're not an employee. Imagine if you were to go in and say as an independent contractor, that means I could hire you to paint my house and there are no hours. I just say, look, sometime this weekend, come by and paint my house. Whenever you do it, all I want is just get it done. You can say by a certain time, but you just got to get it done. So you're not an employee. You're an independent contractor. And then I'll pay you cash or write you a check when the whole thing is done. But when you're done painting my house, you can't paint any of my neighbor's houses or anybody else's house for 6 months after you're done painting my house. Would you take that job from me if that was part of the deal? And why are you going to take the same kind of job from me, these MLM companies? They're essentially offering the same restriction. If you quit this company, you cannot join another MLM company for 6 months. Not just cross-recruit or can't talk to your personally sponsored, can't join another company for 6 months. That's where most of these companies' non-competes are. There is one company out there, and I should save this for the rant zone since I'll be talking about Zango. Theirs is 1 year. You can't even join another company. You know, why would you join under those kind of conditions when you're an independent contractor? And there's several companies out there that have added these non-competes. Personally, I don't recall a single one that ever was upheld in court. I remember going all the way back to, I think it was the Market America versus Rossi decision, when the judge completely threw it out, and in anticipation of the judge throwing it out, they took it out of their policies and procedures first, so they could just come back and say, well, the judge threw out something that we didn't even have in our policy anymore, because they knew the judge was going to throw it out, because they can't possibly apply a non-compete to an independent contractor agreement. But anyway, iJango has one, and you should know that. So that's, in my opinion, and now this is the point where I've just got to keep, I'm not an attorney general, I don't have the ability to make specific conclusions on this, but it is my opinion that this would easily be deemed an illegal pyramid if it were to ever come under scrutiny. There's absolutely no question that the majority of income to the company and the majority of income to the distributor comes from the sale of something that only distributors would purchase that have no value to an end user and cannot be marked up and resold. You have to recruit to make money. So it's basically, again, the director's fee. I would highly recommend, and I don't usually make definitive recommendations like this. I usually just recommend caution, or I say I like that one or whatever. I would highly recommend that you avoid this one at all costs. So what's the main reason why I kind of take Cameron Barrett Sharpe's complete metamorphosis with a grain of salt and don't believe that he's really, possibly really taking the high road and trying to turn his life around and do the right thing? Because he started iJango. And I can't believe that he didn't research this and doesn't know that this is what the rules are of the game. So let's move on to eFusion. eFusion launched in September of 08, so they're coming up on a year old now. And they sell basically what I affectionately refer to as a jungle juice and an energy drink. So they have an exotic fruit beverage, and then they have energy drinks, you know, things like that. I think they started with two, and now they've got four products. The concerns I have about this company is, well, first of all, from a most macro point of view, I've got to wonder what causes people to want to start an MLM company to begin with. Because right now, there's no question that the jungle juice craze is waning. Okay, we're on the wrong side of that curve right now for a startup company. Back in the around 2003, 2004, if you started up any kind of exotic fruit, I mean, just go find some fruit no one's ever heard of before in some foreign land, make up some great story about it, and it was a hit every time. I mean, these were blockbusters, and you just couldn't miss. And I was amazed at just fruit after fruit after fruit, and it would be a hit every time. Companies that had already went through their momentum phases would come out with this new fruit, and they would go into momentum again. So it kept working. So more people kept coming out with more exotic fruits and seaweeds and cactuses. And, you know, I'm waiting now for someone to say that some seed spores from an asteroid just crash-landed and got buried and sprouted and grew these Venus or plants or something. You know, that's the next step we're about to go here, I think. But it's just not working anymore. It's not a guaranteed hit like it was, like in the late 90s when you could just start up anything with .com on it, you know, and it suddenly became a billion-dollar company. That ended too, and that's kind of coming down, like I said, on the wrong end of the curve on that. So the timing there is a little unusual, especially with energy drinks, even quote-unquote healthy energy drinks. You're still going to get that guilt by association with all of the negative press that's coming out about energy drinks. I forget what European market it was. It might have been Germany, don't quote me on that, but Red Bull is actually starting to get banned now. And I'm not saying these are the same thing as Red Bull. I'm sure they're healthier. But still, wrong side of that curve too. So I'm not really sure if this was a product-focused company where they said, we've got some really great products. What's the best way to move this to the field, to market this? Hey, how about network marketing? As opposed to the way most companies start, which is, let's start a network marketing company. What can we sell? Which, oh, how about some energy drinks and some, you know, jungle juice? And that's, I think, how most of the companies are launching today, which can still work, but historically, companies where the product came first and what's the best way to move this to market, hey, how about network marketing, it kind of went in that order, tend to be the more successful companies. But again, that's just a tendency. It's not guaranteed either way. Like I said, these guys have been around for about a year now. They've had tons of success. I believe there's well over 50,000 distributors in, allegedly, which I'll explain kind of how that happens in a minute. But remember, the first time I looked at this company, I saw their compensation plan. It appeared like a 3x15 matrix, three wide, no more than three on your first level, go down 15 levels. They got a very unique way that spillover occurs, so it's not really a 3x15 matrix. It doesn't go 3x3x3, but I'll get to that in a minute. But the point is that they paid 4.25% down all 15 levels on everybody. And the first time I said that, I thought, okay, well, that's 63.75%. So that's already way too much, not even counting all the peripheral bonuses, you know, the bonus pools and things like that that I haven't counted yet in that equation. So that's already paying out too much. Okay, and then I realized, oh, wait a minute, that's 4.25% on just the people that are in my direct lineage. And if those people sideline from me, come into my downline, I'm going to get a 4.25% bonus on them, and the company's going to pay that to me in addition to the 4.25% they paid to their sponsor, right? In other words, if I sponsor A, who sponsors B, who sponsors C, I get the 4.25% on C because they're in my direct lineage. But if C happened to be one of those people that spilled sideways into someone's downline cross line from me, they're going to get 4.25% on them in addition to the 4.25% the company pays to me. That's 8.5%. You know, that, and if it was just all 4.25, it's already paying out almost 64%. And now we've got at least some percentage of these people where they're actually paying double that out to two different people. So I kind of figured that at some point, they're either going to have to cut their pay or they've got a payout cap in here someplace, which I know a lot of binaries do now. It's like a 50% cap, so no matter what they actually say on paper, they don't have to really pay it because it can never go more than 50%. Well, I searched everywhere, searched the fine print, searched their policies. No mention of a 50% cap, so I'm just thinking they're just going to overpay, it looks like, as this company gets bigger. Kind of like a binary creep effect is going to take effect, even though it's not a binary. And by that I mean I don't want to get really technical about this, although this is the kind of stuff that we can go into a lot more detail at the Inside Network Marketing Seminar, this kind of stuff. But when you figure out the company's payout, see, as distributors, we look at our position down. As far as the company payout is concerned, you look at the point of the sale up. In other words, someone on the first level of the company, if they order a product, how much does the company pay out in commission? Nothing, because there's no one upline to the sale to pay it to. The person second level to the company, on that sale, the company is only going to pay out one level of commission on it to the person right above them, and that's it. They hit the company. So there's a lot of breakage in the beginning for a new company, especially one that pays down 15 levels. So in the very beginning, when a good chunk of their national distributor base and sales volume were within that 15 levels, they're getting a lot of breakage, and they're probably swimming in cash, you know, coming in up front, especially with the kind of activity they got in the beginning. But as more and more of a larger and larger percentage of that sales volume started to occur below the 15th level, that payout probably skyrocketed. You know, it just started to pay out too much. And sure enough, earlier this year, they cut pay significantly. The 4.25 on those you sponsored, and then those who they sponsored on down, in other words, if it's a direct lineage to you, you still get the 4.25. But anything that spilled over under you, whether from upline or from the sideline, like I said, I'll get to how they do their spillover in a minute, but anyone that you or your people weren't directly responsible for that spilled over under you, they dropped that to 1%. It's like they cut it by 3/4. And there's a lot of stuff out there in the internet boards and things like that, which I don't give a lot of credibility to, but there's a lot of people, and I won't cite the numbers because, like I said, I haven't vetted them, but saying, you know, they took major pay cuts. And I suspect they would because, as you'll see, the way that their spillover works, it's very possible that the leaders with the largest organizations could very well have had a large amount of their sales volume come from this spill, so where the pay cut occurred. And then on April 1st, ironically, and I haven't verified this was the same date they made the cut, but I know it was around this time, they actually announced a slight increase in pay because the 4.25 used to be on the first, I think, 100 points, and anything over that they didn't pay it on. Well, they're going to remove the ceiling off of that, and you get the 4.25 on anything they buy over and above the amount they need to qualify in the plan, and that probably would have resulted in a slight pay increase. I don't think it compensated for the 3/4 cut they paid on all the spillover, which probably dropped commissions significantly, but that's what they did. Then 5 months later, this month, August, they realized, well, we cut it a little bit too much, so we're going to make the 1% up to 1.25% on the spillover volume. So they moved it back up again. Folks, that's what happens when you create experimental compensation plans. Right? You have to keep moving things around, and you overpay, and you have to constantly keep changing your plan because you don't know how it's going to behave. There's no precedent to it. Now, I'm not going to get into this in a lot of detail here because I'm going to when I get to Mandura in a minute, when I get to their compensation plan. But to some extent, at least the Effusion plan was based on something that resembled something that had been done previously, a matrix. So they had something to go by. But when you come up with entirely new experimental concepts and mechanisms to pay, you don't know really for sure how they're going to behave. All you knew how they were going to behave was in theory, on paper, in models on the computer. Then in real life, they sometimes behave very differently, and you have situations like this, where you have to kind of keep cutting pay and then putting it back up and adjusting things back around. But the thing that really concerns me here is stuff like this. Like we were talking about earlier with the Global Verge and how they kind of insult the intelligence of their distributors with the way they spin some things. I was really put off by this paragraph that they had announced recently. It said, "It is with greatest reluctance that we are forced to remove the grandfathered compensation plan." Now, what they're referring to there, by the way, is after the cut, people were grandfathered in. If you'd already gotten the 4.25% before, you got to keep it. Okay? It was just for new people that came in, the cut was. So they grandfathered the old people in. Now it says, "It has been brought to our attention that a number of individuals in the grandfathered compensation plan have not only been discussing their income, but have been showing photocopied checks and downlines to recruit individuals who will never be able to earn at this level. This is not only unlawful, it is also considered income projection and is strictly prohibited by our policies and procedures. These activities have led to a pressing legal scenario that must be resolved quickly." How about resolving it quickly by suspending or terminating the what surely is a manageable number of distributors who are violating your policies, and let all the ones who have been grandfathered in who are not violating the policy still keep their money? Why are they being penalized? In other words, this is clearly not really why they're removing the grandfathered clause. It's because they can't afford to keep paying it, is what it sure looks like to me. I'm speculating, but think about it. I mean, if there were some of the top leaders saying, "Here's how much money I'm making, and it's not duplicatable," because they're getting that 4.25 grandfather, and the new people they're talking to in the audience isn't going to get it, absolutely, you want to stop that. But how many distributors can that be? Even if it's a lot, you still suspend them or terminate them, and it only takes a few of those to get the rest of them to stop. So just because some people violate your policies doesn't mean you penalize everybody across the board. I mean, obviously, they're taking away the grandfather thing because it's increasing their payout too high because it was experimental and they didn't know what it was really going to pay. I'm going to get a little bit more into the plan here, but there's I don't know how in any way their distributors are going to be able to explain the spillover concept of this plan verbally, like in a three-way call or on a conference call or something. I have no idea. I can't do that, and I explain plans for a living. And it's basically, I'll just give you the summary. The spillover occurs from your sideline. People cross-line from you can add people to your downline. And it's not really a 3x9 matrix, which would be 3, 9, 27, 81, 243, 729, whatever that is. Theirs actually goes like 3, 7, 15, 31, 63. That's the maximum on each level. So by level 15, if it were really a 3x15 matrix, you'd have over 14 million people on your 15th level. But in this plan, you only get 65,500 and something. So the entire downline, if it were a 3x9 matrix, would hold well over 20 million people. This plan only holds over about a little over 130,000 people. So think about this. They've taken a 3x15 matrix, a conventional matrix, and they said, let's make it massively slimmer and remove a lot of the potential number of people that can occur in it, and then let's cut the pay on the people that spill over underneath you, which is the biggest benefit of the matrix, of course, is that you get spillover from your upline. And somehow this new unique concept is going to be an enhancement to just a plain 3x15 matrix. Again, I'm sure the spillover can cause more people to maybe go in your organization than typical spillover, even if that's true, but you're only getting 1.25% on them now. And they're filling up spots that could be taken up by 4.25 people. You would want them in there, not the 1.25. basically, they tried something new. They tried something bold. It was experimental, and the initial results appear to be that it's not working kind of like how they thought it was going to work. They also say things like I've heard people say it was a patented plan. I've not seen that from corporate, though. For any distributors saying it, again, you can't patent a compensation plan. And most companies say it's patent pending because you can apply for a patent to anything, and then say it's pending. You know, the rejection of it is pending. But they say it's copyrighted, first of its kind. Copyrighted, I'm assuming that's to imply some type of security and exclusivity. I mean, you've copyrighted it simply means no one can word their plan the same way as you. They can still have the same plan. They just can't use the same words and descriptions that you use. That's all copyright protects you from. And at this point, I don't know why anybody else would want to use this plan. So, but the thing, first of its kind, it always begs the question, as I'll get to in more detail with Mandura, we know what works and what doesn't work in this business. Why would you want to experiment with your distributors and come out with a first of its kind concept? You can work with a type of plan concept that we know for sure works. Another issue that came up was the whole Facebook kind of fiasco, where a lot of distributors, and I don't know where this came from, folks, because corporate has kind of went out of their way. The VP of sales, Derek Bros, I think is pronounced, their president, Robert Towles. I'm sorry if I mispronounced these guys' names, but I mean, they've really went out of their way to clarify that none of this is true. I never saw any indication that it ever came from them originally, but the distributors have just went nuts with this whole Facebook relationship. There is no relationship between eFusion and Facebook, okay? The management didn't know each other. They didn't work out a deal together. They're not in partnership with each other. In fact, when I contacted Facebook to verify this, kind of at the heat of all of this hype that was out there about it, Facebook responded, and their exact response was, "Thanks for your email. There is no relationship between Facebook and eFusion or their affiliates. We are actively working to stop the spread of this deceptive information and to set the record straight. Your help in that effort would be greatly appreciated." End quote. So not only is there no relationship, Facebook is pissed about it. And that's all we need. By the way, that was one of the few that's still out there that was kind of on the fence about us, about MLM. As you remember from the very first podcast where I talked about MLM ignorance, and we talked about PayPal and eBay and WordPress, Craigslist, what was the other social media site that kind of banned us? I forget them all now, but most of them are anti-MLM. You look in their policies, they forbid MLM advertising, you know, that kind of thing. Facebook was at least on the fence about it, and now we got stuff like this going on, and this kind of is the distributor's fault. They really got carried away with it. Like I said, corporates tried hard to debunk it all. But, yeah, there is no relationship with Facebook, and now that's kind of making them and us all kind of look bad as more of this information gets out there saying about the big Facebook scam that eFusion was involved in, because that's how it's getting spun by all of our antagonists out there. So it doesn't help anybody when that stuff's out there. So if you're in eFusion and you're doing that, please stop. There's no relationship on a corporate level with eFusion. Their game can be posted there just like anybody else can post something there, but there's no corporate relationship. There's no partnership. Also, I've heard on some message boards that eFusion closed their customer service phone line and that you can't cancel your auto ship. You must email corporate and have them do it. You can't just go in your back office and cancel your auto ship. And I thought, that's typical internet crap that, you know, isn't true. And so I checked it out, and yeah, it is. It appears. For example, you go to the corporate website, they give you an email address and a fax number, but there is no number you can call corporate. Because if there was, I would have called them, by the way. You can't cancel your auto ship. You do have to email them. I found the section in their new description of their policies where you've got to ask them to cancel me from auto ship. Not that that's, I guess, a bad problem, but it makes me curious about the financial strength of the company, that they can't afford enough staff to take calls from their distributors. Either that, or when you put in like 55,000 distributors in the first year, you know, you must be getting a lot of calls. I get that, but that's part of the deal. That's part of the game, guys. If you weren't prepared to handle those types of calls, you know, then maybe you should have rethunk this. You know, in my MarketWave website, I got a question on the survey that you can go to. It's marketwaveinc.com. If you participate in the survey, you can see the results. One of the questions is, if you had unlimited funds, what would be the first thing that you would do to improve your current network marketing company? Now, I thought when I put that question in there, and I've gotten thousands of responses now, too, by the way, that it would say, well, we want to lower the product prices or increase the payout or stuff like that. But instead, the number one and two response to this essay type question is more and better company training and more and better corporate communication. That's the number one and two thing you're all asking for out there if you had unlimited funds and could improve your company in any way. And when hundreds of distributors are saying that, a good part of these 7,000 respondents, kind of makes you wonder, do you want to completely cut them off from a human voice at the home office? Now, if you email them and there's a challenge, yeah, they'll call you, but that doesn't solve the problem there. You got to have a number, a customer support line or distributor support line where you can call a human being. Legal issues about eFusion. Very few. And their attorney is Jerry Nira, by the way, which probably explains why there are so few legal issues here. Things I got a problem with are conceptual, compensation plan, mathematical. But the spillover hype is rampant out there. There are people out there saying, you know, get in our group, we'll build your downline for you, and our little online systems will do it, and things like that, which actually bring in some SEC issues, because then you're kind of selling an unregistered security if you're saying, we'll do all the work, just put money in and sit back and see how much money you make. But that's not corporate's fault. That's not legal's fault. That's, again, the distributors in the field. They're just getting a little overzealous in how they're presenting this, and I'm sure that corporate's trying to rein these people in. But there is a lot of spillover hype. Your upline is going to, or your sideline in this case, is going to put people in your downline. You don't have to do any work for it. The online medical claims, there were some, but not from corporate, by the way. Not corporate, but online, like if you were to Google, you know, eFusion with their weird spelling, E-F-U-S-J-O-N, which I don't think was random. It does mean something. But like Google that and cancer, you know, or that and any other disease, some distributors out there are becoming a little overzealous in how they're presenting it. Again, nothing to do with corporate, though, and I'm sure that's, you know, they got to take care of that. There's only really one minor policy issue that I really have, in fact, the only legal issue at all I really have a problem with, and that is in their frequently asked questions section, they say, what if I'm an associate and I fail to place a minimum $120 product order for two consecutive months? And the answer is you'll lose your position in the compensation plan, and you'll become just a member. Now, you cannot be paid in the compensation plan. Okay, you cannot meet your quota, you don't get paid. But your physical position in the hierarchy, your distributorship itself, that's paid for by the annual renewal fee. Okay, when you pay the renewal fee up front, whatever that is, I don't remember what it is offhand here, but when you sign up to be a distributor, you fill a distributor application, it's a 1-year contract. You're a distributor for a year. You have all the rights and privileges of a distributor. You may not meet your quota and get paid in the compensation plan, but your physical position should always be there. Now, they say, if you do requalify, you start ordering again, you can get a position back, but you got to go to the nearest available position. You don't get your original position back. You really should. You shouldn't lose the physical position after just 2 months of not ordering. You should only do that if after a year you haven't renewed your distributorship. This, by the way, I just kind of threw in more for kind of an educational thing. It's a minor issue, a very minor issue. There's no way any AG is going to come in and do anything about this. Please don't read more into it. Those of you who are not eFusion distributors and you're jealous of all the success they're having, please don't exploit this and say, Len Clement said the FTC. No, that's not what I'm saying. None of that's going to happen. I simply threw it out there because I thought it was a nice little tip for those of you who are looking at policies and procedures and things like that. Annual distributorships should maintain your physical position in the downline. I say the best to last, or the worst in this case. My biggest concern about eFusion is something called the window shade effect. The window shade effect is like, imagine pulling a window shade down, you let go of it, and it snaps right back up again. Well, this was occurring a lot. Matrix plans were very popular back in mostly the 70s. They made a little comeback in the late 80s and early 90s. And we were seeing a lot of this happening, where the organization would fan out in a very triangular shape, actually, which normally doesn't happen. Because normally, as you all know who have downlines, you can see your downlines. It's more like a diamond shaped. If you were to chart out the number of distributors on each level, they're more in the middle levels. And if you were to really plot out the lineage, I should say, of your downline, it looks like the roots of a tree, just kind of randomly sprouting in all directions. But in this case, it does kind of fan out in somewhat of a diamond-shaped organization. There's imagine like a tall, skinny, kind of an arrowhead sort of a thing with just a little bit of a slant to the base, to a point. Well, when that happens, people that get into this, and right now there's a lot of what I call the 49ers. This is this gold rush mentality for anything that's a matrix or a binary or some depth-oriented plan that's just launched. We got to dive into this thing, stake out our position, get the best position available, because again, I'm going to get all of this spillover, especially in this company where they've hyped the spillover like crazy, and which is a natural byproduct of having a very unique and quote-unquote revolutionary way of spilling over that no one's else done before. Obviously, they're going to focus a lot on the spillover. But for whatever reason, you get in and you get all these people put in your downline for you, and the earlier you get in, obviously, logically, they're going to think the better. So people are diving into this thing not for the product. And then they like the product after they get in, and they're forced to try it because you got to buy something to qualify. But everything that I've seen, and I've been on a couple of their calls, I've listened to their presentations online, I've watched the little videos, it all seems to be about the compensation plan and, oh, by the way, we've got these products. And they've got a product presentation, and they do talk about the product, and it's not just completely secondary like some companies out there. But the point is, that doesn't seem to be the primary motivation for joining the company. It's to get in and get a high position in this matrix and catch all this spillover. Then what's going to happen is it's going to fan out so far, and in most cases it takes anywhere from maybe a year to 2 years, somewhere in that range. But all these people at the bottom, because it can't fan out that way forever, obviously. Everybody can't get a free downline. So all the people at the bottom, they go, wow, I didn't get my free downline. I didn't really get in it for these kind of expensive juices and energy drinks, so I'm out of here. Then the next level up says, well, what little money I was making is gone, so I'm out of here too. And the next level up says the same thing, and the whole thing snaps back up again, and then the company gets deluged with product returns. Now, this window shade effect, again, it doesn't always happen. There's no kind of rhyme. It could be within 6 months. Like I said, it could be 2 years, a little bit longer. It kind of depends on how fast it all grows and how fast it kind of stops growing and what causes things to stop growing. I would think that with the amount of growth they had in their first year, over 50,000 people, and then you start throwing in like pay cuts and things like that, could kind of sort of cause the effect to occur earlier, I would think. But again, I'm hypothesizing. Right, this is just based on historical precedent, and I would be concerned about there being not enough actual glue to hold these people in, even if they don't get the prime position in the matrix. You could have something else there to really say, I want to keep building this based on just the merits of the opportunity and the merits of the product. And I'm just not seeing that enough people are really joining this company for the merits of the product. It's just something that they buy to qualify their position that they hope is going to get a free downline built under it. So we'll see. I could be completely wrong. It happened once in 98, sort of happened in 03. It's happened twice. I could be wrong a third time. You never know. That was a joke, by the way. Some people don't understand my sense of humor, and I've actually done that kind of joke before, and I get emails from people, oh, but Len, you said this. I'm just like, people, God, get a joke once in a while. I'm being sarcastic. But the point is, actually, I've been wrong a lot. Just ask my ex-wife. The point is that this could happen, it could not happen, but it's certainly something that you should be aware of. And I guess the biggest question is, was corporate aware of it? Was it aware of this phenomenon that occurs? You know, or did they just, that the plan appears to be very theoretical. And that's just not how I personally would want to base my career on. If I'm going to get in the company and build a downline and have long-term success, because we all want to be, right, if we're going to be successful at this business, what does that mean? It means how you're going to feed your family for the rest of your life. This is a career choice. Right, this is something people go to school for 4, 8, 12 years and spend over $100,000 to decide. And too many people in this business are deciding it from a flash presentation on a website. So from a corporate standpoint, though, I'm thinking, do you really want to put your distributors in a petri dish and experiment with their potential livelihood when you already know what works out there as far as compensation plan design, as far as compensation plan theory? There are many beautiful plan concepts that absolutely work. Why not just duplicate what they're doing? In other words, why not do the same thing you're going to teach your distributors to do? Look at your successful predecessors and duplicate what they did. Right? It's a business of duplication. That's a cliche we've been hearing for decades in this business. I think maybe we need to practice that a little more on a corporate level too. And that's my segue, by the way, into Mandura. Now let me first say just right up front that, and this applies actually to eFusion as well, I think the management of Mandura really has good intentions here. I think they're taking some risks that are necessary, but I do think that there's some good ethics here. I don't think there's any intent to do anything wrong or deceive anyone or hurt anybody. Or, you know, I mean, I really think they honestly believe that they're doing the right thing here. And I've heard some very good things about Casey and KC, one's initials, Yarbrough, that founded Mendura and are now leading it. I've heard some very good things about them. I mean, as part of my normal process, I do background searches on people and Google their names and things like that, and can find nothing but just praise about them. So a very good, clean history and background and so forth. So I do really think that they've got a bold vision here, at least for the theory of their company. But I think there's a couple of areas that they're probably, and again, this is you know, as most of these reviews are, my opinion's based on observation, legal precedent, MLM history, and just things like that. I think there's a couple of areas that are going to get them in trouble. First of all, one of them is the fact that, well, I won't even get into the two major areas first. One's their comp plan, one's some medical claims. But the first issue I have is that this is obviously a very new company. It just launched, and they've only got one product. And the one product, it's really just another jungle juice. Now, and I know they all have their own unique fruit or combination of fruits and their own unique story and blah, blah, blah. It's just another juice. And I'm really not sure if this industry can survive, or a company can survive in this industry, I should say, just being another juice. You need something to set yourself apart. I mean, that curve is, like I just said before, we're on the wrong end of that curve now. They're not guaranteed hits. You need to do something else besides just come out with another, you know, fruit no one's ever heard of before and throw it into a bunch of other juices and run with that. So the fact that they're a single product company, it's always been kind of risky in the sense that, you know, if something ever happens to that product, it's kind of like, you know, if you're a football team and you've got one Hall of Fame quarterback but no backup. And if your quarterback gets hurt, I mean, you're tight end or your kicker or somebody's coming in at quarterback. So, and that's not going to be good. So, I mean, it's like skydiving without a reserve chute or mountain climbing with only one rope. I mean, you really need some other products back there to survive something that might cause, like that product, for example, going on back order. Now, there's all kinds of other issues can happen with a product, but let's just say a product goes on back order, which is the case with Mendura already. I mean, just the end of last month in July, they're on back order already. And they only have one product. Now, if you've got a whole bunch of products and one product goes on back order, that's no big deal. But when your entire company is based on one product and that's the only thing you have to produce, there's no good excuse for already being on back order. I don't care how much volume has come in. But the biggest challenge to being a one product company and going on back order is if that back order is for more than a day or two, you can't charge credit cards. Now, if you've got 20 or 30 products and somebody places an order for 8 of them and you got 7 and one's on back order, you can charge their card and ship them the other product a week later, or you can substitute it for another product or something like that. Well, that's the only product you got and that's what they paid for and you can't ship it, you can't charge them for it. Now, I believe they're off back order now as of this recording, but the point is, that's just one of the many ways that you can be very vulnerable when you've got only one product. Or you can go ahead and charge them for it, and then you can possibly lose your merchant services account. I'm not saying Mendura did that, but I just learned the hard way from my own company when I started the company back in 2004, and the manufacturer said, who was a business partner, yeah, the products are running, they're coming off the line now, start charging those credit cards, we're shipping tomorrow. So we did it. 2 weeks later, he finally shipped product. And in the meantime, we were crediting back all the credit cards about 2 days later after we charged them, because we couldn't ship immediately. That's the rules. So anyway, the compensation plan. It's essentially, it's not a 3-by matrix, it's not a 2-by matrix, it's kind of like a 1-by matrix. It is literally one giant straight line, the entire company. Now, I know they've got an 8-generation paying thing that's a separate thing where people are more structured like a Unilevel. But for the most part, everybody goes in one giant straight line, and then based on your various volumes, you can qualify for a certain number of these 1% bonus pools. And the more 1% bonus pools you qualify, the more you can make. Now, this is interesting because I actually came up with a concept one time, this is many years ago, when I was trying to think of a whole new concept for a comp plan. And then I learned my lesson. Now, let me back up this. Let me say, first of all, at some point in MLM history, somebody invented a Unilevel for the first time. Somebody invented a stair-step breakaway for the first time. Somebody invented a matrix for the first time. Somebody invented an Australian 2-up for the first time. And it's failed 100% of the time, and people are still using it, but that's another story. So whatever it is, the somebody's invented it sometime. Back in 1989, there was a guy by the name of David Crow, invented something called a binary. Never been done before, completely unique mechanism for compensation, which is now today one of the most popular and copied compensation plan concepts in MLM history. Can it happen again? Sure, it's absolutely possible. But at this point, after 70 some odd years of network marketing history, why do we still need to experiment with our distributors? Why do we need to guess or theorize as to what kind of new plan might work? Back in 1991, I think it was, when I was first starting out as a comp plan consultant and designer, I had a concept, talk about it in my book actually, that we're going to change the industry. We're going to stop kissing up to the heavy hitters, I said. We're going to make a plan for the little guy where everybody can at least make some money. And I created a unit level that paid 2% on the first level, 3% on the second, and 40% on the third. Then somebody else started to copy that concept, and the term compressed unilevel came into play. I didn't invent the term. I've been credited with inventing the compressed unilevel. I didn't. There were some versions of it previous to that. I guess maybe you could say I popularized it. And it's not something I'm proud of, because it's the only compensation plan concept I've ever designed that didn't work. You know, I did the same thing. I went with a company called Outback Secrets out of Texas, out of Dallas. They were going to sell emu oil long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And I told them right up front. I said, this is experimental. I'm pretty sure it'll work. It looks great on paper. Seems to be, you know, like it worked great in theory. And they said, let's go for it. And it didn't work. So I won't get into why it didn't work, but for whatever reason, it just didn't work. For one thing, it had no heavy hitters wanted to join it. So this is why all the compressed unit levels throughout history are either gone or have added a whole bunch more depth to their plan. So sometimes, you know, they work, sometimes they don't. But the point is, with in this day and age, with so many compensation plan concepts that we absolutely know work and work so well, why does anyone even need to try to experiment anymore and even try to come up with the next new big revolutionary plan concept that no one's ever done before? There's no need to do it. You know, there's already everything that we need to be successful as far as a company in creating a compensation plan that's out there. And even if it does work, people will just copy it like crazy, and then you only have that unique advantage for a very, very short time. So I just don't even understand the motivation to coming out with it, other than from a marketing standpoint, just to say we've gotten something new, unique, that no one's ever did. But to me, personally, that's not a good thing. I don't want to stake my MLM career and my livelihood on theory, you know, or on a test of a new type of plan, which, and the initial results are, from what I've seen so far, it's not working too hot. I've gotten some back office access from a couple of different distributors, more than one, so I know one's not an exceptional situation, and one showed about 50,000 total organizational points. They qualified for 6 1% pools, and the check he earned was $10. Just recently, about 2 or 3 days ago, I checked someone that had over 280,000 downline points. They qualified for 7 of their bonus pools, and the check that they were earning was a little over $12. So not only is not a lot of upfront income in here, but the other concerns I'm not sure a lot of people have maybe thought of that might be traps in this plan is, think about this. If right now the perception is, and all the excitement is that look how many people are joining my downline, because it's all in a straight line. So people are coming in going, I signed up, and by the end of the day, I had 66 people in my downline. Well, I've only been in 1 week, and I got, you know, 890 people in my downline, or whatever it is. And they're not putting this in perspective. This isn't like a typical downline. That would be pretty phenomenal numbers. But when everybody's going in a straight line and every single person that joins the entire company comes in after you in a straight line, some of the numbers I'm hearing are not that great, actually, for a whole company. But even if they were, let's say I had 10,000 people in my downline this week. That means the whole company had 10,000 people. That could be impressive, but what happens when it slows down? Someday that's going to start slowing down, and all this initial ground floor buzz is going to go away and all this kind of stuff, and it'll be back to a normal kind of growth pattern. And somebody, an individual distributor, goes into their back office and says, wow, this week I had 40 people added to my downline. Wait a minute. That means the whole company had 40 people join this week. That's what that would mean. Now, again, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I'm just saying when inevitably it starts to slow down, the company is going to basically expose itself to every distributor as what its overall growth rate is. And it's kind of like a company going public, being publicly traded. When you go public, it's great because when you go into a momentum phase, you can prove it. You have audited financials. But when things turn ugly, you can't wear makeup. Well, here, it's almost like they're going to be kind of opening their books to the distributors in a way, and distributors are going to get an idea of how fast the entire company is growing, which looks great now because it's really growing, but maybe not so much later. It's not maybe something they want to expose. But like I said, the initial kind of returns here from what I've seen from a couple of examples is the plan isn't quite paying, I think, maybe the way they intended it to pay. I also have some concerns, too, in that you know all the bonuses are stated as being based, everything except the retail bonus, of course, is being stated as based on purchases by new reps. They're openly declaring that. Now, this is where either their MLM attorney hasn't reviewed this yet, or they're not taking his advice, or they haven't hired one yet, who knows, but I'm sure that he would be telling them that you've got to base your qualifications on your purchases or sales from others. Now, even if they're doing that, you still have to state that publicly. When you say your qualifications are based on your own personal purchases or what your people you sponsor purchase, then it's a recruiting bonus. Because if the sponsored person is the only person that creates that volume, you've got to recruit to make money. So your monthly qualifications, whatever that is, it should be at least possible for all of that to be met by sales to others. From your preferred customers, from people who go to your website and order, you know, whatever it might be. It doesn't have to be your purchases. Now, again, that's more of a semantic thing, but legally, that's an important factor. So it kind of makes me wonder, has their material been reviewed by an MLM attorney yet? And I would tend to say no, not so much because of that, but because of the blatant, over-the-top medical claims that are all over their corporate site. So again, just kind of leave the point of the plan. They are saying that this is, you know, they've got a lot of excitement, a lot of confidence in this plan. I would just want to know, what is that based on? I mean, again, what have you based your confidence that this plan is going to work on when there is really has been nothing before it like this at all? It's got to be entirely theoretical. And I just don't know the reason for why you would want to make guinea pigs out of your distributors at this point. The medical claims. There are things like restoring the health of anyone suffering from an illness. That's a quote. I mean, it sounds kind of general, but if you're suffering from an illness and you're going to restore their health, that's a medical claim. They talk about sore throat. Remember, sore throat, and I'm not saying I agree with this, by the way, but the FDA would surely consider sore throat to be a disease. Remember, disease doesn't mean cancer. It means dis-ease. And, I mean, pain, a headache, they call that a disease. That's considered, if you have a dietary supplement that treats headaches, the FDA is going to say you're making a medical claim. And I use that headache as an example. They didn't use that. They use things like sore throat. Or this cell damage can lead to cancer, age-related diseases, and heart disease. Now, remember, a lot of this has to do with them talking about what you know, oxidants can do and things like that in your body, free radicals in your body and things like that. And some of the juices and various different fruits and substances in their juice have these abilities, have been shown to have these abilities to treat these various diseases. Doesn't make any difference. The FDA and the FTC will absolutely still consider these claims as being part of their brand because they're attributing it specifically to their brand. In other words, if you say A equals B and B equals C, but we're not saying A equals C, the FDA and FTC will do the math. A perfect example is a company years ago had a Poly-C product. I've mentioned this on the podcast before. We have tons of vitamin C in our product. Then later in the brochure it said, studies have shown the high doses of vitamin C help reduce the incidence of heart attack and stroke. Now, nowhere did they say their Poly-C product, it was called, reduces the incidence of heart attack and stroke, but the FDA did the math. I mean, they sent them a warning letter, and again, this was years ago, long since resolved. It's just an example. You know, the FTC and the FDA go by the net impression or the implied statement. It doesn't have to be obvious. The FDA has sent warning letters to people who have shown before and after photos. One was a woman on a walker, and then the after photo was she was dancing on the dance floor. They said that was a medical claim. Treated her arthritis or something, or osteoporosis, or who knows. Full-blown migraines. Forgot, I guess they did talk about headaches. Joint pain has reduced. Again, joint pain. Pain is a disease. Chronic abdominal pain subsided. Suffering from arthritis pain for several years. This is from a testimonial. But here's, I won't get into all of these, but I got a whole list of them here. But here's the three worst ones. Hasn't had to take heartburn medication. Arthritis pain is minimized. So they haven't had to take heartburn medication. stopped my asthma controller medication. Another one, no longer have to take my pain medication. The FDA will send you a warning letter and warn you and say, hey guys, just knock it off. But if you suggest that you can stop taking medication prescribed by a doctor in lieu of your dietary supplement, they tend to throw the book at you. And that's kind of what they're saying here. These are part of personal testimonials, which are not safe haven. You can go to Dietary Supplements and Advertising Guide for Industry. That's a document. There's a link to it right on the MarketWave website. Go to MarketWaveInc.com. Look in the Research Links section. You'll see the link to that document. It says it right there in black and white. Personal testimonials. You still can't make a medical claim. Okay, you can't cite third-party material from PubMed if you're going to use it to sell your brand. None of that. It's not allowed. It's First Amendments. I get that. Blah, blah, blah. I'm not saying I make the rules. I'm just telling you what they are. You know, normalizes blood sugar. Well, is that a medical claim? You know, makes blood sugar normal? Well, what's abnormal levels of blood sugar? If it's too high or too low, it's diabetes or hypoglycemia. It's one of those two disease conditions. So if you normalize your blood sugar level, you made one of those two disease conditions go away, and now it's normalized. And by the way, that was specifically cited in the FTC's case against CSilver. One of the things, examples they gave in their charge was balances blood sugar. So there's no question. I'm not theorizing here or assuming. Like I said, there's a whole bunch of other here's. So somebody's really needs to explain to them what is a medical claim, and the FDA can do that for free. Section 6 of DSHEA. Back in 1994, the act that was passed here allows these companies to send these types of claims to the FDA and say, can we say this? And if you do that, the FDA will send you what's called a courtesy letter, not a warning letter, which says, no, you can't. And if you're already doing it, you know, clean it up, stop doing it, and it's no big deal. I mean, they like you to ask them. But if they catch you doing it, then they'll send you a warning letter. And you don't want to get a warning letter, because basically MLM companies kind of operate under a two-strike thing. You get the warning letter, and then the second time around, unless there's a lot of years between the warning letter maybe, they don't typically just send you another warning letter. So those are the two things that I really have a problem with Mandura. The totally experimental compensation plan, that just I don't see how it's going to work even in theory, and what was so attractive to it even on paper. And I do think it's a flawed concept that will probably likely change at some point in the future. I love the bold, the bravery of it, the visionary of it. Let's come up with a whole new thing like they did with the binary in 89 or all these. I mean, maybe they'll come up with a whole new plan. We'll all start copying it someday or whatever. I don't think so. I don't think this is going to be it. You think you're probably going to see a comp plan change coming up in this company's history. But I'm actually more concerned about the medical claims than anything else. Somebody's really got to rein those in. Remember, what I just quoted, by the way, that came from the corporate site. God knows what the distributors are saying out there if they're following this kind of lead. That's just the overview for the Mandura line. And before I get into the rant zone, because I do want to get into that just a little bit, even though I know I'm way over time here, I just want to say, if anybody has a problem with my focusing on the negative, I would love to start talking about positive things about companies and positive reviews. I don't want to turn this into just nothing but a slugfest here. My concern with that is that people are going to think, well, if he says something positive about a company, that must be the one Len's in. Or you're going to say, well, I don't want to promote this or network it. I don't want to let my downline know about it because Len says positive things about competing companies. I would hope none of you would think that. But let me know. Please give me some feedback about that. If I were to start doing positive reviews of companies and making positive statements about them, if I promised you that none of them were the ones I would ever be in, right? I would be totally unaffiliated to whoever I said something positive about, would you be more or less inclined to listen to this show, and would you be more or less inclined to refer others to it if I were to focus more on the positive of a lot of companies out there? Because there are a lot of great companies out there I can say a lot of positive things about too. It's just everybody seems to always want the dirt, or all the ones they're asking me about for reviews just tend to be ones I'm not too keen on. But let me know. Give me some feedback on that too. And that's same thing. showfeedback@cox.net. showfeedback@cox.net. The rant zone, then we're going to wrap this up for today. I only have one, and it's Zengo's X51 product. This is this their new product that they're saying is in the first month that the product came out, it's breaking company records and eclipsing the first month sales of our Zengo Juice launch exponentially. That's a quote. Now I'm thinking, first time I looked at that, I go, okay, I misread it. Let me read it again. Okay, their first month sale of this X51 product, breaking company records, not industry records, at least they didn't say, but company records, and eclipsing the first month sales of our Zengo Juice launch exponentially. But your Zengo Juice launch was the first month the company existed, and your first month of your X51 product was 1 million distributors later, because they're claiming to have signed up 1 million distributors in the history of the company, by the way, not right now, but still. They've done over $750 million in sales. They've signed up over 1 million distributors total. And now, today, the first month of X51 is breaking that first month of Zengo sales. Of course it is! I mean, of course it is! Because you didn't have 1 million distributors back when you launched your... Is anybody else, like, thinking, what are they trying to say in that statement? Does anybody else not get the kind of the absurdity of it? Anyway... The biggest concern I have about it is it's an implied treatment for anxiety and depression. Now, they don't specifically say that from a corporate level, although the distributors are saying it like crazy. But again, it's the implication. It's the implied statement. It's the net impression. That's the FDA's term that they go by. And the language that they're using is clearly implying that this dietary supplement is somehow supposed to treat or prevent or in some way make better anxiety and depression. I think this is hilarious, and I've seen this so many times in this industry. I don't know why people don't wire this up and realize how ridiculous it is. It helps you have more energy and vitality and vigor, and it helps you sleep. In the same sentence, it gives you more energy and helps you sleep. I assume that's absurd on his face, and I don't need to explain why they should maybe pick one. I'm actually going to quote here. Decreased stress, improved mood, increased energy, and enhanced sleep quality are all key components of vigor, because this gives you more vigor, they say. That's a new product category, by the way, they just created. A category creator, new category of supplements targeted toward vigor. So... first of all, by making you more vigorous, it's going to enhance your sleep quality. And dietary supplement products or pills or capsules or any of these types of things, just call them supplements. That's what they call them. New category of supplement that targets vigor. New category besides the other 1,000 products in this industry that are supposed to help with your vigor. Besides them, it's a new product category, I guess. This new whole product category creator thing is one of the big peeves of mine. It has been for years. I reluctantly reference you to a link, a topic at MLM.com in their board about that if you want to comment on your opinion on that. It would be really great if somebody with a little more professionalism and thicker skin can actually get on that board and discuss some of these issues with me, because I'm having a hard time finding some people that fit that qualification. The last point I want to make, and again, this is about the category creator thing. It's not specific to Zengo at this point. Although, I guess the last point I'll make about them is, why is this their code name? X51 is their code name, and the real name for the product is about to be announced. So, one of the greatest successes that Zengo has had, and one of the best that they've been at of any company in the industry, is branding. I mean, the Zengo brand. I mean, they got a, you know, movie theater in Salt Lake City called Zengo, and they do these events, and just they've got so much branding around Zengo. So of all the companies that would be the best at branding, why would that company launch under one name and create all this excitement and hoopla about it under that name and then change the name of the brand? I don't get that at all, the logic of it, but again, it's just me. Category creating. Again, this is an entirely separate rant subject here. What is a new category of product? Now, if you come out with another jungle juice, it's not another category of product. It's just another jungle juice. So I don't care if you take the juice and you make it thicker. I don't care if you take the juice and you make it a powder and you put it in water. You know, whatever it is, it's going to be another juice. It's not a new category creator. And not only that, but why is it such a big deal if something's a category creator? Why is that? Why is that better in some way? Because throughout network marketing history, most of the companies that really were the first to create a new category of product failed miserably. It was hardly ever the first to market with a certain category of product that succeeded. I mean, there was a company in the late 50s, and I'm racking my brain trying to remember the name of it, and I can't do it, but I remember it had the woman's name was in it, like Mary Kay, but it wasn't Mary Kay. Cosmetic company that went MLM and failed. And Mary Kay launched in 63 and had great success. They were not the category creator in this industry. Nutrilite was selling vitamins and supplements years before Amway was. Nature Slim started selling a nutritional protein powder 3 years before Herbalife. And I know because that was the first company I was ever in back in 1979, I think it was Nature Slim. And it failed miserably. And then Herbalife came out and had tons of success with it. I mean, any one of the numerous aloe juice companies from the early 90s could be called the category creator for the jungle juice industry. You know, and they're all gone. And you know, and then Noni was the first to ever really do something with, I guess, the actual exotic functional beverage, and had great success with it. So it wasn't the first to market. Network 2000 was the first to sell long-distance service through MLM, and they failed. And then Excel came along and had great success with it. This doesn't even apply to MLM. I mean, the last podcast I told you about this little computer time rental company where you can make copies and rent hourly time on a computer back in the mid-80s in San Francisco called PC Time that I used to own. And then 3 years after my partner said, we're not going to franchise this, we don't think it's that good, one of our competitors launched and kind of took over the market, which today is called Kinko's, at least until FedEx bought them for billions of dollars. But again, first to market with that, didn't succeed. I can't think of any example where the first to market was the big boomer. There's always someone that came in after that. So what's even the benefit of being a category creator? I don't even get that either. So that's my rant on that, folks. I'm way out of time. I think I did. Hey, I broke a record. Longest show ever. But I'm going to start taking some a little bit longer breaks because I've actually got some other things like a life that I got to take care of. But I definitely do still want to get to the interviews with Kevin Thompson, the MLM attorney. I know I've been promising this now for months, but I'm really looking forward to talking to Richard Brook about the concept of how does a company compete in this industry without buying into all of the hype, which OxyFresh never has. So that'll be one of those positive representations of a company, by the way. And I want to do a show just based entirely on anti-MLM zealots. You know, these few little people, this clique of people that have made it their life's mission to put up blogs and write letters and do all these things to try to tear down our industry and the absurdity of their argument and how easy it is to debunk. So I'm looking forward to that one too. So those things are coming up. But folks, like I said, I'm way out of time. So that's all the news it is that's fit to print. Give me your feedback on any of this. All I ask is please don't flame me and tell me I'm biased. You know, like just if I got anything wrong, just tell me why I'm wrong. I'll be glad to fix it. Right. If anybody is involved with any of these companies I just talked about from corporate, they want to come on the show and talk about it, let's do it. Absolutely. You can defend anything that I said other than my opinion because I get to have that. So let me know. So folks, thanks a lot for your time, for hanging in there with me this long. And I'll see you back on the next podcast, most likely the interview with Kevin Thompson. We'll talk then. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.